Steve Dale's Other World on WGN. I am Steve Dale here until 3 o'clock. You know, when I heard about this, I just rolled my eyes and I thought, oh my gosh, this is terrible. A military coup in Myanmar, that's the Southeast Asian country once known as Burma, happened several months ago at this point, leaving many, many dead, many more in jail, including several journalists, including one journalist, Danny Fenster from the Detroit area, a graduate of Columbia College right here in Chicago. And one of those working to bring Danny home is his brother, Brian Fenster. Brian, thank you very much for your time and your willingness to talk to us on WGN. Hi.
Well, it's so great to talk to you. And, you know, this is hard stuff to do, but it's the least we can do for Danny. So thanks for the platform here.
Oh, it's the least I can do. You know, let's tell the story, I think, is where we begin. There was this military coup for a while. Your brother, who had been in Myanmar, covering, well, I think that's where we start. What was your brother exactly doing there, and for how long had he been there?
Yeah, he had been living in Yangon in Myanmar just over 2 years. Ironically, he moved there. Let's see, I think it was May 3rd, 2019, which is World Press Freedom Day.
Hmm.
Extremely ironic. So he was living there. He was working at Frontier Myanmar. He was working at another publication that started working at Frontier Myanmar in August of 2020. And they were just kind of, it was a Burmese publication that was also in English, a digital publication, kind of covering everything. Culture, tourism, things going on in Myanmar. And then when the coup started in February, you know, clearly the world was watching and they kind of switched gears and they were just covering all of that stuff.
And what specifically did your brother do?
He was a managing editor there. So he was not reporting. He was at his desk editing stories and also making sure the English translation were ready to go for online.
English, what language did he speak? I don't know the language they speak there.
Yeah, Burmese. And you have to pardon my ignorance. I too am not quite sure if there's different dialects from different areas, but there was someone who would interpret the news, and then he would make sure all the phrasing made sense in English.
Did he speak Burmese?
He picked up some things. He could get by, but no, he did not speak fluently. But, you know, he had a lot of friends there, obviously his co-workers at Frontier, and he had established quite a network there, which is great. We've been keeping in touch with all of his friends.
That is great, and I want to circle back to that at some point. So he was just doing his job there, but then he was going to leave not necessarily because of the coup, or was it because of the coup?
No, he wanted to come home and just for a visit. He hasn't been to the States in over 3 years. I was fortunate enough to see him in September of 2019. We had a friend's wedding overseas in Poland, so I got to spend some time with him. But my folks, my kids, my wife, our grandma haven't seen him in over 3 years. So he was just coming here. He was going to surprise my parents. But he had every intention of returning and doing the job.
And I understand that he was at the airport. He made it through security without a problem. He was ready to board the plane. And then what happened?
Yeah, from my understanding, he made it through security, baggage check. He was at the gate, and they have to wear PPE on the plane. So he was all suited up. And before he boarded the plane, they kind of just tapped him on the shoulder and detained him.
Who's they? Do you have any idea?
I'm not sure if it was the police or the military or a combination of the two. You know, we're at a loss for answers because it's been 14 days and we haven't been able to speak to him. The embassy has not been granted access to see him. So we're just grasping at straws here.
Do you have any idea what he was detained for?
No. No, we only have our assumptions. You know, he is a journalist. The military, the regime there, doesn't want the world to know what's going on. They want to close the society and have complete control including the story of what's happening there. So, you know, we're just assuming he was a journalist. He, I don't know if he was on a list or they realized who he was. But it's what's puzzling is that he would tell us he had a lot of friends, reporters who were leaving the country since February without issue. You know, a lot of people were leaving because journalists, especially reporters, were such a target.
Well, right. And you know, some journalists, as you point out, made it out. But I read that other journalists did not. He's not alone in among the journalists that are presumably imprisoned.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, we wish we had more answers. We know for a fact that he takes his job very seriously. He's very proud to be a journalist and to be in such good company in that community. And he was reporting the news, editing the news. He wasn't taking a personal stance on what should or shouldn't be.
What was life like in Myanmar for him before and then during the coup?
I think it was very exciting. He is someone, gosh, it's hard to talk about him because there are so many layers to him, but he's truly guided by just a curiosity of the world. You know, being a white guy growing up in the suburbs, you know, he knows how that world works, and he's very curious to get out of his comfort zone and go to the right or to the left, not necessarily straight. So he's just very interested in these places that people maybe wouldn't pay much attention to. And, you know, in Myanmar, they were, I don't know if it was a fully functioning democracy, but it certainly was headed that way. There was a free flow of information and society was opening up. And that was very exciting for him.
What attracted him to that particular country, do you know?
You know, we used to live in Chicago. We spent about 6 years in Chicago, and some of the best years of our life, I have to say.
Of course.
A lot of growth there and just great time. But we mentored these Burmese kids. And the name of the organization is escaping me. They do such good work in Chicago. But they help immigrants get acclimated, get work, get housing. And, you know, we would just hang out with these kids, and they did not speak any English. But, you know, I think that curiosity kind of started then. So this would have been in 2008 or 2009. And before he was in Myanmar, he lived in Thailand for about a year, and an opportunity to work as a journalist came up in Yangon, and he jumped on it.
And he went to school in Columbia right here in Chicago as well, correct?
He did. He did. Columbia College. Give a shout out to Dan Sinker, who we've been emailing actually the last few days, one of his favorite professors. And yeah, he adored it there and he thrived there. And I hope everyone there is proud of him, because look at him. He's doing what he loves, in a country that needs that work.
Indeed, but now in trouble, presumably.
Yes.
You mentioned that you've talked to many. I want to hear who you've talked to, what public officials have done, what ambassadors perhaps have done or haven't clearly done, and where we are now, at least to the best of your knowledge. We'll do that when we come back. We're talking with Brian Fenster, brother of Danny Fenster, a journalist detained in Myanmar, on WGN. Well, we're talking to Brian Fenster, brother of Danny Fenster, journalist detained in Myanmar. Brian, what do you know? Anything different than what you knew when it first happened?
Not really. It's frustrating. There's not much of a relationship, it seems, between our government and the regime. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine how they can have a relationship. These people clearly do not follow international law or have any sort of protocol. Information is so slow to move anywhere. You know, as I was saying, it's day 14. Our embassy, our State Department, has pressured them not only to release him, but to grant access to our embassy. And 14 days in, and they've yet to even reply to the request. So, you know, we're talking to our State Department 1-2 days a week. we have contacts at the embassy there. We're talking to every day. Our congressional leaders here in Michigan have been outstanding. Our governor and lieutenant governor have sent letters to the State Department on our behalf. Congressman Andy Levin, we talk a few days a week, vouching for us tremendously. So it's not for a lack of effort. It's just hard to get through to them. And, you know, there's no reply.
Is he really in this prison that's called the Insane Prison in Yangon?
Yeah, that's, his employer, the day it happened and then a week after it happened with their second statement from Frontier Myanmar, they list that place. We're fairly confident that's where he is. I believe in whatever public statements are out there from State Department officials and elsewhere, they list that place. And that seems to be where they take journalists. So, and, you know, I don't know if there's an article in the New York Times a week or two ago about this prison and what goes on there. We're very concerned. We want to make sure he's unharmed, first and foremost.
Yeah, of course. How is your mom and also your dad doing?
You know, they are doing okay. Naturally, we all have our days. I mean, there's another layer of it, too, because we're out there trying to work as hard as we can to talk to the media, to keep his name current. And so, you know, that's taking a toll as well. It's exhausting. And it's hard, too, because in order to do this, you kind of have to, put the armor up and not try to feel the feelings to get through, to do the work. So, but, you know, my house is like a, like the command center. We got family here all the time. Our community has set up meal trains for us. And thankfully, our community, our friends and family, brothers and sisters all over the place are lifting us up.
I think it's called consular access. Isn't it mandated that in circumstances like this, officials, ambassadors, by international law, are required to meet both for the benefit of the prisoner, but also the benefit of understanding what's going on?
Yes. I think it's like something within 72 hours you're supposed to grant access.
And what does Myanmar say when asked about that by whoever from the U.S. government is asking that question?
We don't know because they haven't replied. So they're on their own.
So who from the U.S. government, how high up to your knowledge? I mean, has it gone to the Secretary of State or our Vice President?
We, from our understanding, everybody is keeping tabs on this, and the powers that be are working on it, what that means. I couldn't tell you specific individuals, but, you know, we're in constant communication with Ambassador Vita to Myanmar. We're actually going to be talking to him later today. So we have all the right people working on this.
Is this ambassador in Myanmar now?
Yes, he is. Yes.
And do you talk to him by phone? Is it Skype? Is it Zoom?
Yeah, we do. We've had phone calls. We're on email all the time. And we some video chats as well.
So if we have a relationship.
Yeah, that's great.
Sorry to interrupt.
I just want to express we're trying to establish as strong as a relationship as we can with people in our government because we want to do this together. You know,
you're very smart, but I could say what I want. You know, so I just don't understand why our government, if we have especially if we have some sort of relationship with whatever government they may or may not have there, can't at least give you answers as to what they're being told.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good question. We're asking ourselves that, but we are putting our trust in our government and all the right people to get this job done. So, you know, hopefully this week, we're entering week three, feeling optimistic about getting some news, and hopefully someone can get in there and check on him.
He's not the only journalist that's being detained in Myanmar, and certainly not the only journalist in the world. What do you do for a living?
I am a video producer, freelance video producer.
All right. Perhaps the right person, hence your ability to understand the media and marketing and all that, has getting the word out in a way that's been non-confrontational, as you kind of alluded to, but yet very much using social media to do the trick, hashtags and all of the rest. Has that helped?
It's been tremendous. I mean, never in our wildest dreams. We have the drive to make this thing go worldwide. But, you know, when you see it happening, it's surreal. So, we're just so grateful that people are touched by Danny. I mean, part of our strategy is we just want to keep talking about him. He's such an amazing person, and he's drawn to people who suffer, and he wants to make their lives better by telling the world what's going on. I mean, it's so important. So we're just happy people are connecting with that, and they're sharing the news, they're sharing his story, they're signing our petition urging the State Department and the administration to get this thing done quicker. And we're just blown away. It's working, and we're just trying to create a pressure cooker to get him home. We just want him home.
Well, that's my next question. The petition is, so what can people do? I suppose the petition, signing it, is one thing folks can do.
Yes, we have a website, bringdannyhome.com. You can link out to that petition. It's a moveon.org petition. Again, we're just trying to have another touch point for people, something to show, look, we have a lot of people behind this thing. Let's get this done. Obviously, keeping his name in the news cycle on social media with the hashtag Bring Danny Home is so important to us. I mean, we credit a lot of our, I don't know what you want to call it, success or awareness to that. Because naturally, people lose interest. That's just how the news works.
Yeah.
And yes, that pains us tremendously. This is our family member. But we really got to keep pushing because it's working. And calling your elected officials, letting them know what's going on, asking what is going on with the situation, it's huge. And one last thing on the website people can do, we have these T-shirts that were made. A good friend of mine, Robbie Biederman, who's a local designer, created this kind of logo for our campaign. Another family friend in the neighborhood, Tim Downey, created the T-shirts, printed them off. The great thing about the T-shirts is that whatever proceeds we get, when Danny gets home, he's going to decide where that will be going to. So that's very important for us. But yeah, just keeping it out there, keeping it out there, keep calling people, keep sharing. It's working.
Well, my hope is that you're willing to talk to us again, or maybe we can actually talk to Danny. You know, this is Chicago. He lived in Chicago, and apparently you both loved Chicago, which is great to hear. We can do that soon when he's home. That's the hope. And you know what? When it comes down to it all, the information that we get that we take for granted, friends, is from journalists in one way or the other. And, you know, I consider myself a journalist, and what I do is so very different than what Danny Fenster does. No comparison. I'm not suggesting that. But I am suggesting we need to understand what's happening in the world. That matters to us. And without Danny Fenster's out there doing it, we would have no clue. So
that's right.
Yeah. I empathize, though I, of course, can't understand the heartache that your family is going through. I wish you, Brian, the best, and your mom and dad.
Thank
and
you.
I understand your grandmother as well.
Yes, 95 years young, still going.
And does she understand what's happening now and all of that?
You know, not quite. And that's by design. But eventually we're going to have these tough conversations with her.
Well,
she is a World War II survivor from Poland, so she's seen a lot in her life, and we're trying to spare her
A World War II survivor of?
She survived the Holocaust, only survivor from her family along with her husband. So these are my dad's parents.
Yeah, yeah. Man, I wish you and your family the best. Give us that website one more time.
BringDannyHome.com.
Easy enough to remember. Brian Fenster, thank you so much for your time. Sorry to talk to you under these circumstances, but I'm hopeful that in a week, those circumstances that we have today will change completely, and Grandma will never need to know the difference. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you, brother. Thank you very much.
Thank you.